You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 203rd episode, we talk about this week's comics, and in this week's spotlight, John talks about The Authority. Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I'm John.
Hello, I'm Jane.
Hello, there's no James this week.
Who?
Yeah, who? That's... I don't know. I don't know who I was talking about. I'm watching the fourth season of Fringe, and it starts out with most of the characters not remembering one of the main characters. That's probably already a spoiler, but it's very confusing. I wish we'd agreed we were going to pretend we'd never heard of James at the beginning, because then...
Or maybe...
Should we start from scratch? Hello, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm John.
Hello, I'm Jane.
And there is nobody missing. You see, now I'm telegraphing it there, aren't I? I'm highlighting
maybe
it.
What we should do is next week, it's a stage amnesia, so next week we'll both forget.
Yeah.
I won't be here, so you guys will forget.
And so then,
And then when James comes back, we'll be like, who are you? What? Why are you here, you strange man?
He is averse to being on episodes of things after episode 200. That's yeah. What's going on there. He really struggled with 201, didn't he, I think? And then now he's gone. Apologies. Right now, I will apologise for last week's episode. That was everything that could go wrong with last week's episode did go wrong. I hope you all enjoyed the slight odd break, though. It's always nice to have an odd episode. We should have done a clip show.
Just focus on what's going to go right this week.
Okay, I'll just focus on what's going to go wrong this week.
No,
so how
right.
are you two? Oh, how are you two? What have you been up to this week? Jane first.
Me first. This week's been busy, busy, busy. I can't think much past work. More Breaking Bad. Woo!
You sounded... That woo was a little bit... It started out quite excitable and then sounded a little bit desperate at the end.
Because that's grasping onto the one thing that I really enjoyed this week. And I haven't mentioned it, but we're in the last season of Dexter at the moment, and it's got that season sag it has.
Oh.
Always has it.
In around the middle.
Yeah.
I was talking with someone about Scandal earlier on, and... about that thing that sometimes happens where a show pays more attention to the long story than it does to the odd episode. Yeah. Dexter doesn't really do odd single episodes, though, anymore, does it?
No. It stopped that long time ago.
So it's kind of like you're in the middle bit of the story, which the middle bit of any story is really just rearranging all the pieces so that you can get at the end. So it's sort of...
It's a lot of ideas in one at the moment, which is a bit hard to cope with. And my brother has been incredibly cute this week. It's his birthday coming up soon. And last Christmas, I pre-ordered GTA 5 for him. And that's obviously going to come out a few days after his birthday. And he was texting me yesterday going, do you think it'll arrive on the day it's being released? And he just keeps texting me going, do you think I might get it early? What day should I take off work to not have to wait for the postman?
Oh.
Yeah. And he's got the week after it comes out, he's got to play it.
When is that?
It comes out on the 17th.
So when's his birthday? So it's 16th.
His birthday's on the 15th.
Brother's birthday's on the 16th.
Oh, creepy.
So a happy 15th birthday to Jane's brother. 15th.
God, that'd be good. That'd make me really young if he was 15.
Oh.
In fact, this would be an awkward situation.
Would it?
Yeah.
Why?
I would be not 18.
Oh, I don't know if that would necessarily be awkward. But you could have a young...
My brother is not that much younger than me.
You are allowed to have a young person on a podcast. You're just not allowed to have sex with them.
Why today, after the recent news reports that were coming out today?
The awkward...
Can you tell who it is yet?
Oh, the awkward middle bit. We might as well get it out of the way. Rolf Harris has come up on charges. It's all very awkward. For him, it's all very awkward.
Well, no, it's just awkward for us.
So it's always difficult when you bring up child, like teen molesters. It always gets really difficult to carry on a conversation after that. I'm sorry, guys.
Should we talk about something else then?
Yeah, yes. Jane. So basically work and birthday. Brother's birthday present. Being cute. Brother being cute.
Yeah,
brother being cute, but not in a sexual way. John, what's your week been like?
My week's been all right. I don't really know what I've done. I finished watching 6 Feet Under again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You cried. No, your partner
always
cried.
I always cry at 6 Feet Under. And then we started watching Breaking Bad Series 4 because we're quite behind everyone. So
you're now four seasons ahead of me, so you're not behind everyone.
And that's about it, really.
Ooh, that's a pretty good week. I can't remember any of what's happened to me this week, mainly because there's a baby and that ends up taking up quite a lot of... No, that's bollocks. He's fine. It's nothing to do with him. I'm just back at work this week properly and I don't really know how to cope with it, even though it's a four-day week and I'm not as busy as Jane is at work.
Yeah, I actually am annoyed that there's a bank holiday because that was an extra day I could have done more stuff.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, that's what's got to. I thought today was Wednesday. I thought yesterday was Tuesday and I almost screwed something up. But I was like, new plan! And then rescued it, so it's fine. But yeah.
I can't even picture a time when I'll be that busy and be able to cope with it because I'm really struggling with basic stuff at the moment. I'd rather be at home playing Avengers Alliance or whatever it is on Facebook, which isn't even a real game, but I'm just obsessed with it.
So you've basically got addicted to Avengers Farmville.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it is. It's basically Farmville, but with superheroes in. And it's a little bit backwards in its ideology. Like, for example, if you have more than one female you get to play three of your characters at one time in each battle.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think it's something like if you choose, and at the end of each battle, depending on what you did and how you did and which characters you chose and stuff, you get extra bonus points for certain things. It's like achievement things for each battle. And if you play more than one female character, you get, I think it's like a flirt bonus and stuff like that. Oh. And if you play an all-female team, you get some sort of thing as well. And it's just all a little bit
odd. Is it a new costume for them?
No. I mean, no, costumes cost you a lot of money.
No, but it's the costume fall off.
It's not that. I mean, it's not that bad. It was just a bit it was a bit, like, weirdly retro and, oh, I don't know. But I am obsessed with it because I like seeing things move up in really slow increments and to be tempted to send Facebook money for games.
Right.
It is basically Farmville.
Oh, to send Facebook money, not Facebook money.
No.
I thought Facebook might now have its own currency.
No, not yet. Although
no, that's
it is
next year.
It is now its own country. I think that's all gone through. So,
be a crowded country. I'm glad I'm not part of that.
It'd be
but
really
at least everyone would be friends.
Country.
Sorry?
At least everyone would be friends.
Everyone would be friends, or you wouldn't have to talk to anyone who wasn't. That's true. But then you'd sort of say, one thing that happened today, a friend of mine, I hadn't even realised she was in a difficult relationship, but apparently got out of a really difficult relationship, wrote a thing that was quite vague about the person, but about how this had been an abusive relationship and she was out of it. And of course you end up with the whole like button thing because everyone was kind of being supportive of her, but it's a really unusual thing to like, isn't it?
When someone says like I was punched in the face and someone says your mum likes this, thanks mum.
It's very, very strange. I don't really understand it, so I'm uncomfortable about this. That would be a good button. A button that think you are oversharing. That would be quite a good one.
What does it actually mean if they press the button?
It just flags it so that you can. It shows that you're giving your support for it.
Yeah.
I'm doing a thumbs up so you all know. It's like a thumbs up. It's like a big thumbs up. Well done. You've been in an abusive relationship, but you're out of it now.
That's weird. I'm so glad I'm not on Facebook.
Yeah.
So am I.
You're glad that Jane isn't on Facebook?
No, I'm glad I'm not on Facebook.
Am I the only one on Facebook?
No, you're not the only one on Facebook.
No, there's about 20 million other people.
I tell you what, if you all go to the Facebook country, I think John and I and life partner Steve are going to be alone.
Oh, man. No, I think I wouldn't want to live in that country. Hang on. John's getting a little bit excited about the fact that this is the first time you've had your own mic in the studio, isn't it?
It is. It's, I kind of feel like I've got a giant Terminator cock in front of my face.
Oh, John. Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
You
why
hadn't?
Why would they need one?
A Terminator cock?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Making baby Terminators.
No.
Maybe this is something you guys could talk about afterwards.
How else do you think they make a T-1000?
No.
The T-1000s are the ones that are kind of goopy, aren't they?
Yep.
Okay.
Now you know why.
I can't even remember what I was going to say. In a minute, we're going to talk about comics. You're thinking, please, God, stop talking about Terminator fucking. I know. We will be talking about comics. You can talk to us about comics as well. You can do that by emailing us at
momcast@gmail.com.
Where you can just send us mail to tell us how awesome or crap you think we are. You can also send us 2 to 5 minute audio contributions about comics to that same address, and it might get in the show. Well, it will get in the show. We don't get enough of them to be choosy, to be fair. Which really sounds like damning all the people that we've included in the show with fame praise.
Yeah.
I don't mean it. You're all awesome. We have had contributors on the show lots in the past, and they're all lovely. We love you all, contributors. You can also talk to us on Twitter to varying degrees. There's Mom Comics is the main account. There's also Jane on...
Jane Mom.
There's John on...
John Mom.
That's without an H. He's one of those. There's James Mom. He's not here.
Who?
Oh, no, I think we decided we're going to do that next week. Oh, I don't know. And there's me. I'm at Nick's site because I'm difficult. That's N-I-X-S-I-G-H-T. We are on Facebook. There's a page on Facebook that, although, as we've established, I'm the only person of us that's on Facebook. We're also on Google+. Where? And on Tumblr. You can find links to those and listen to all of our past episodes and look at the other stuff like reviews and stuff of indie comics that John does. And film reviews and stuff at
momcomics.com.
And that's just in case any of you aren't sure, because I've seen someone tweeting it wrong in the last few days. That's Momb with an M-O-M-B. We used to clarify this a lot more. It's not Mom as in an American mother, because that gets really confusing. I don't know if there are mom comics.
There's a Mom Cast.
There is, which is about being a mom.
Is it?
I think so.
Okay.
But there isn't a Mom Comics. That'll just be comics about moms. That'd be weird, wouldn't it?
There's going to be a market for that.
I'm sure there is. I definitely know that there are specialist films that you can see online that are about moms. I'm not going to go into any more detail about that. Should we talk about this week's comics?
Yes,
please.
John, what did you read this week?
This week I read issue 15 of Captain Marvel.
That's from Marvel.
It is indeed.
There's conflict of interest there with the name, but that's fine.
But basically, last month, Captain Marvel hit a very sort of big turning point after a disgraced Kree warrior called Yon Rogg, also known as Magnetron.
Magnetron?
Yep.
Sounds
from
the Transformers.
70. No, you're getting that mixed up with Ultra Magnus and Megatron.
Megatron, oh,
who were two separate robots.
Okay, we can talk about that afterwards. I want you to explain to me about the Transformers.
That could take a while.
No.
Yeah, it's not going to be on the mic. It's fine.
Okay. But the disgraced Kree warrior basically attacked Captain Marvel by exploiting a telepathic link. And in the midst of all this, she had been diagnosed with a brain tumour that would basically destroy her if she flew. Because obviously it's how stories work with drama.
Mm-hmm.
She flies.
Well, she has to.
Yeah. And basically the tumour exploded.
Oh my God, that happened, did it? I've been reading it kind of in the background.
Ugh. Oh dear, sorry.
Was
spoilers.
That, no, it's fine. Was that in the middle of the big crossover that just happened?
With the, is it the Mighty Avengers
Kelly
Pseudoconic also writes? The story has been really good. There's been some really big up and downs with the art, because the artists have changed so often, and it's a testament to the book that the story has kept it going, and all the people involved have done a great job. So this issue's a bit weird because we've gone from the end of one crossover straight into the middle of Infinity,
yeah.
And basically, in amongst all this, Carol Danvers has undergone what is quite clearly a massive change of psychology. And it's a bit difficult because basically she spends the whole issue talking about how she doesn't feel like herself and she feels different and how she is a mystery to herself. And in amongst this issue where the Infinity crossover is happening, it's a complete mystery to the reader as well.
Yeah.
And it feels
because
really
it's
odd.
Part of the crossover, or do you think it's intentional?
I can't, that's what I can't work out, because I think it's intentional and I think it's trying to make the best of having the crossover. And the issue's generally a very good issue where they're all flying around in space and shit explodes and it's pretty awesome for that. And it's a good issue, but it's really difficult because we've been told that the state of Carol Danvers post-tumour is going to be a big mystery. And despite the fact that we've now got the first issue of her post-tumour, she is still a big mystery.
Yeah.
And it's... I feel really conflicted about the comic because I absolutely love the title. And it's been really well written up till now. And this issue is very well written and it manages quite a lot. But it's really difficult to kind of judge if I like where it's going to go. I'm going to keep reading it. The other thing as well is they do make a bit of a weird choice in that the... Basically, there is a big reveal at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be so much better if they didn't put it on the cover.
Oh, is it on
in
the cover?
Fact,
oh, okay.
They use... I think, if I'm correct...
Almost exactly the same image.
And it basically just made me go, oh, okay, that's the end of the issue. I do have to say, though, I love the new costume because people just seem to have been arguing about whether or not this is a good look for Captain Marvel, and I think it is.
It only takes 14 issues for people to... That's like... What, has it been a year, or has it double-shipped for some of that?
Oh, no, it's been a year, and... Admittedly, I didn't read it for about 7 or 8 issues. I was just buying it and stacking them up. Mm-hmm. But people have been talking about the costume, saying they think it's horrible and they don't like it because she's not fighting crime in a thong or something. I don't know. This is the most practical and I actually think quite sexy costume that a female superhero could have, because it does not make sense for any female superhero to be flying around in a bikini. It's just weird.
I think I've missed this entirely, because so people aren't getting up in arms that it's different from the one that Jamie McKelvey designed that she's been in for such a long time, or
no, this is the one Jamie McKelvey designed.
Oh, well, then,
I thought this then, is but loads of people seem to be really sort of against it because they don't like the fact that she's got her legs covered up
I'm really confused.
And I don't understand that, because I genuinely think it's a really good costume. I think it's actually, as I said, I actually think it's quite a sexy costume.
It's not about what you find sexy, John.
It's not. But
it's about what's right for the character.
I think it suits the character perfectly, and I think the fact that it looks like a military uniform suits the character perfectly because of the name, and it's Carol Danvers. She's military.
You do fancy a soldier as well, though, don't you? I know that about you. Not a specific soldier, just all of them.
Yeah, generally.
Or an Air Force person.
Yeah, I love a woman in uniform.
The thing you mentioned about it being straight off one crossover, straight into another, and then there's major stuff happening to the character as well, that's really difficult for a comic to tread through, because there was a huge problem with New Mutants, which I think kind of scuppered that book. When that did it, where, and it was roughly the same number range as well. It was like towards the fifth.
Was that the legacy crossover?
It ended up being involved in a whole bunch of different mutant crossovers and struggled to maintain its own through line through that. So I can appreciate that's quite difficult. Your slight confusion about it, I get that. That makes sense. But you're still liking it, you're still going to buy it.
Yeah, I'll carry on buying the book because I really enjoy the writing and I really like where the story's gone.
Just quickly then, sorry, who drew it?
It was drawn by... It was written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, and this month it was drawn by Patrick Olive.
All right, he used to do one of the Untold Tales of Spider-Man or something. I know that name.
I don't know. But his artwork is very, very good. Whether or not he's going to carry on in the book, I don't know, because it does feel sometimes like it's just a bit of a lottery when you open the book up, who's drawing it this month.
I've noticed that looking at it on the shelf. So, okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
It's all right.
What have you got, Jane?
I have it all
on your Comixology
on
your phone.
Electronic device. This week I purchased American Vampire Anthology.
Was that like $7.99 or something?
It was. It was worth every cent converted into pennies.
How much was it in pennies?
In America. I don't know how many it was.
About 650 pennies?
Maybe. That sounds about right. Mm-hmm. I bought it in dollars. My bank statement will tell me what it was in pennies. I knew this was coming out. Didn't realise it was going to be this week. Completely annoyed that I couldn't get to the shop yesterday, so bought it on Comixology. Definitely well worth it. It's 9 stories in total, one of them being a 2-part story by Scott Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque.
Hot dog.
Yay.
Sorry.
You were quick. Which sort of frames the anthology, and then it's just a multitude of writers and artists in between that. I won't go through... I'll list the titles of the stories, but I won't go through who sort of... Well, actually, I'll say who created them. There was Lost Colony, with a story by Jason Aaron and art by Declan Shelby, who you...
Saw the art on that. It looks lovely.
Yeah, it's really nice. Bleeding Kansas, with the story by Raphael Albuquerque.
Hot dog.
And art by... Ivo Malazzo.
I don't know who that is.
The Canadian Vampire, a story by Jeff Lemire, and art by Ray Fawkes.
Ray Fawkes, okay, yeah.
Greed, the story and art by Becky Cloonan. The Producers, a story and art by Francesco Francavilla. And Essence of Life, the story by Gail Simone, and art by Tallulah Lotte, who is the creator of Thought Bubble.
Oh, yeah. She's her art's ace.
That story was my favourite in particular. Last Night, story and art by Gabrielle Barr and Fabio Moon. Portland, 1940, was story by Greg Rucker and art by J.P. Leon.
Leon,
yeah, sorry. Then the second part of the Scott Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque story. They're all so good. The one, like I said, Essence of Life really stood out. It was quite a dark story. All of them featured vampires, but this one in particular had such a real element to it as well. But it was gory and shocking and vengeance. And that was good.
Revengey.
Yeah, that was really good. The Canadian Vampire, I really, really liked as well. It was just such a Jeff Lemire story. It was really gentle and harsh at the same time. And the Producers was a really good story as well. I really, really enjoyed that. And Last Night, which was by Gabrielle and Fabio Moon, good story, but my God, the colour palette in that was incredible. And that was Dave McCraig did the colours for that. Geordie Belair's done quite a few of the colours as well, which has been really, really nice. But it was the tone of that story, the colour tone of that story was exceptionally good. It really gave a feel for the time, because it's sort of going... It starts off in... 1554 the stories, and then it comes right through up to sort of the 1950s, so we've got a real... each story is a different sort of slice of time. It starts and ends with Skinner Sweet, and he may or may not appear in a few of the stories, but they're all really good standalone, to the point where like some of these could be some really, really good stories, just you know, they could have their own comic quite easily. Real treat, definitely. You know, I said Breaking Bad was the highlight of my week. I think this is actually the highlight of my week.
Can I just ask, do you need to have read the whole of American Vampire to get the stories?
Absolutely not, no.
The stories seem pretty self-contained.
Yeah, they are. Even,
I was going to say.
The Lost Colony one definitely seemed quite self-contained.
Yeah, even The Man Comes Around, which is the one that Scott Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque did, which is actually features Skinner Sweet, was... fine to read standalone. It's
because I think I've read the first trade, but the names you're listing, that's pretty much a who's who of who you should be reading in comics.
Well, End of Jane's, so yeah. I was thinking that's a bit of a like a fan service thing specifically for Jane, because of Becky Cloonan and the Moon and Barr and people like that.
Francesco Francavilla as well, who I love his artwork. So yeah, it was really, really good. A real treat, especially as we've been without American Vampire for a little while now. It's It's
when's it actually come back?
I don't know. Soon, I hope. It's a big saga.
I feel a little bit spoiled for that because it feels like at some point in the past I threw my lot in with the 30 Days of Night vampire universe, and I feel like I personally at this point in my life, not in the whole of my life, but at this point in my life, I feel like I can only really sustain one like vampire world at a time.
Okay.
Zombies I apparently can still manage lots of, which is good because they're all over the fucking place, but at the moment, yeah, I looked through America. I looked through it, and it looked amazing, and some of the stories looked amazing and really self-contained. The art was great. But, yeah, it feels like you make a decision. You either want your vampires all, like, horribly 30 Days of Nighty, or you want them, like, I don't even know what I'm talking
about.
Well,
an American vampire, there are some that are a bit 30 Days of Night.
I'm going to call it.
Yeah,
Days of Night. See what you did there.
I had a moment in Forbidden Planet where I realised that yet another zombie game, board game, had just come out, and there's another one being kickstarted at the moment, and I was like, I reckon what they're aiming for is a point when you can literally just have a zombie board game shop where all you sell is zombie board games.
I thought it was preparing us for the zombie apocalypse.
Maybe.
I think that's what it is.
Maybe it is. Maybe you're right, actually. But yeah, so that sounds really good. Can I just mention, I did leaf through I don't buy Deadpool, but I did leaf through the most recent issue of Deadpool, which had art by Declan Shalvey, and it actually looked, I quite liked his stuff on Venom, but it actually looked amazing, that comic did. It looked really good. If I could really stomach Deadpool as a character, I'd probably have gone for it. It just looked really good.
It's always the way, isn't it?
He's a good artist, that guy. Yeah.
See, that's the thing. A lot of the people I haven't heard of in that I've heard of all the people, but there's a lot of them I haven't read or seen stuff from before. So it's always good sort of way in to get into certain creators.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, you're right. Did you get anything else, Jane?
I didn't, but I did put a call out yesterday for webcomics. As I knew that I was probably not going to be able to get any books, I was like, I've been reading a couple of webcomics which we've already covered on the show, so I was just like, oh, does anyone have anything that they'd recommend? And after reading a very dark anthology about vampires and people ripping to pieces, I found the perfect webcomic to accompany that. It's called Centre of Somewhere by Luke Foster. And it's a cartoon strip that he does daily, and it's based in the middle of America, and the characters are Fingerlet Fish, Nick Charles Malloy, Oakland Squirrel, Blue Jay Turbo, and Kim Chu. There is another character that's turned up in the latter in the most recent strips, but I can't remember her name. They are a fish, a boy detective, a squirrel, a grumpy bird, and a lady, a successful business owner, it says here.
This sounds ridiculous.
It is, but
I love it already.
So cute. It's really, really nice, and it's such an all ages thing as well, which is webcomics are, I've read some all ages ones, but they don't really capture me like this one did. It's just really, some of them have a little bit of a theme going on, but most of them are sort of self-contained strips, and they're just really, really funny. It's really nice to see. I think Luke's been doing it for 2 years, literally almost 2 years to the day, I think. And seeing, as always with webcomics, when you see the early stuff and then compare it to the more recent stuff, you can just see how much it's sort of progressed and changed throughout the time. And it is just quite a simple sort of strip. It's not it's cartoony. It's very cartoony, so it's very clean, and it's really nice to sort of, you know, colourful and to look at and stuff. But it's just silly and it's nice, and it was just what I needed after that, especially after the week I've had as well. Just something that just made you smile the whole way through. I haven't quite read all of them, but I did get through a fair few chunk of them.
That's tends to be the way I end up reading web comics because I forget they're there, so I end up reading whole chunks at a time.
And it's just all of the different characters have all got different traits which are really quite funny, and they get into silly little situations and stuff, and it's just you just can't help but smile while you're reading it.
What was it called?
Centre of Somewhere.
Centre spelt E-R.
Yes.
All one word.
Yep.
.com?
Yep.
Right, that will go in the show notes. I'm just writing it down.
Okay. Well done.
I think it makes us sound more professional if I write stuff, if I take notes, because it shows that I'm paying attention.
Ah, yes.
Maybe it'll make us sound even more professional if we get to the point where I don't feel the need to comment on it while I'm doing it.
I highly recommend it for everyone. Everyone can read this.
Even if, not just people who are all ages.
Yes, people who are a specific age can read it.
As well as people who are all age. Yep. Excellent, good. Okay, cool. My comics. I read 2080. It's good. The only thing I want to say about it, Lee Gallagher's final part of Defoe is great as well. I've enjoyed this book of Defoe more than I have enjoyed even the previous books. The one thing I wanted to say about it, though, is Glenn Fabry did the art in the Slain episode that's in this, where they've been revisiting all of the old stories. It doesn't look like Glenn Fabry's art before, which has kind of been the point of this. It's still obviously him, but it's much looser than the style he had when he did this comic in the first place. What's interesting personally for me about this is a very long time ago at Bristol Comic Convention Con, that's what it's called, that's its official name. It stands for
convention,
Bristol Comic Convention Convention.
Okay.
But they shorten it to Bristol Comic Con Convention or what? Something.
But
back when they used to have it in this place on the water that was right next to a bar, it was quite easy for me to, because the bar was quite expensive, it was quite easy for me to have a beer instead of a Coke, because to refresh myself in the morning, because it was like the Coke was really expensive. And Glenn Fabry was there, and I went to see him at lunchtime to get sketch, and I think that Glenn Fabry had maybe had the same issue at the bar that I had done, where he wanted soft drinks but they only really had alcohol that was worth drink. So I think we were both a little bit emotional at that point. I'm not sure, I wouldn't like to cast aspersions, but I asked him to draw something for me. And he drew something, and I said, and I thought I was being lovely, I really like your normal artwork. I really like the artwork you normally do. But I think this really loose style that you're doing, that you did for my sketch, was great, because I love my sketch. I think this is great. I'd actually love to see a comic by you that's looser like this, because it's great. And, you know, I imagine it's quicker, but it's also so lovely. And I don't think he took it as a compliment it was intended as. I suspect that there was some other things playing on him at that point. I don't know, in terms of where he thought he was with his art. I imagine he's quite a perfectionist sometimes. What's interesting to me is that, and apparently he was still kind of a bit upset about this later on in the day, but I didn't go near him because I was a bit scared that I'd upset him, because I love him. And this comic looks a lot more like the sketch that I had way back when. I don't think that's anything to do with me, but what I'm saying is I was right. His artwork looks fucking great when it's looser. People should listen to me more. That's a lesson to everyone out in listener land as well.
I'm just more getting over the fact that in the morning inside of a beer instead of a Coke.
It was cheaper. Well, it wasn't strictly speaking cheaper, but I have an issue with spending more than £1.50 on a Coke, which I've never really gotten over, and I will. I'm like, £2 for a beer sounds about right, but £1.50 for a soft drink sounds like too much, so I'd sooner spend...
You must be eternally disappointed.
This was a really long time ago.
Right, okay, I was going to say, what?
I might be getting the prices wrong. Sex number 6, $2.99. Sex is always great.
Don't spoiler it.
I won't. It's always great sex.
I almost wish I could hear that in the Chris Eubanks voice.
The story seems to be like kicking off a little bit now, but it's just such a good looking book, and it's really
good,
interesting.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure what it's going to be, which is interesting.
Ooh,
at 6 issues.
I have theories.
Okay, we should talk about those.
Yeah.
Avengers Arena. I get the. I think it was the last issue was a bit of a, not a filler issue, but a. It was a what's happening in the rest of the world while this story's going on issue. And it was written by someone else, and it felt really different. It was drawn by someone else. This is back to Dennis Hopeless and Kevin Walker. It's the continuing story of the... It's the start of a new arc, but the continuing story of a bunch of teenagers from the Marvel Universe who've all been stuck in a battle royale situation. It's so good. It's so good from an emotional perspective. The characters are all very real and nicely formed. they've got very different backgrounds from each other, but they're all linked by being alienated, kind of alienated children. It's got a lot more in common with the comic of Battle Royale than it does with the film, actually, in that the film is a very direct and immediate sort of experience that's great, and it's really tight and all done in a couple of hours, and you find out a little bit about each character, whereas the manga comic, kind of every time you see a character going through something, you get this sort of, it becomes their issue, and you find out loads more about them, and that's kind of still what this is like. You're still finding out loads about the characters. I was never very interested in X-23 in any other iteration, but this is just great, and she's the character that everyone else is scared of, even though she's quite nice. It's just really, because she's just terrifying. She's basically Wolverine, but without any of Wolverine's social graces. It's kind of Lazarus is on issue 3. It's every one of my books was $2.99. You should go and try and find it. It's the thing I was thinking about. This is Greg Rucker and Michael Lark. I've been waiting for them to do a book together again for years. I've gone into more detail about this in the past, and it's from Image. It's kind of a family drama in a 20 minutes into the future sort of a setting. I think Rucker actually mentions that in the letters page, the 20 minutes into the future thing, which is a Max Headroom quote, but just fits so many different things. It is an unusual family drama. Each issue so far, we're only on issue 3, and each issue has felt really different from the last, so it'll be interesting to read all three of them, because there's definitely a story running through them. It's not like it's changing focus or anything. It's just each one's felt like, the first one felt like dystopian future, the second one felt like family drama, this one feels like something else again. But it's just such a good looking book, and such a good, the characters are great, the character designs are great. I think her name's Forever, but Eve, the Lazarus of the title. It's just really good, and it's issue 3. It shouldn't be difficult to find the first two. Well, it probably is quite difficult, because I think they ended up having to go to more than one printing.
But I'm hoping Comixology, they go to another printing of issue 2.
Yeah, or Comixology, or definitely. I mean, I suspect it's going to do well enough to get to trade, and it's going to fit together really nicely as a trade. But the back matter and the letters pages and stuff are quite pretty good as well.
The back matter in the first issue is really good.
I haven't had a chance yet. In the second issue, there's a timeline, which I don't think was in the first one.
No.
Ooh. And of the times leading up to it. And this continues that as well. Really interesting. I haven't had a chance to read the timeline, though. The one anomaly in my comics this week was Station to Station from Dark Horse Comics. It's $2.99. It's a collection of, I think it's a collection of a story that ran through Dark Horse Presents.
Oh, right.
I'll say it's written by Karina Bechko with art by Gabriel Hardman, and it's kind of a science goes wrong sort of a story where they're doing experiments on a San Francisco island. There's a big explosion on an island near San Francisco. Is it called Treasure Island? I don't know. I guess it's a real spot. There's an explosion there, and the outside world doesn't really know what's going on there. On the island, there are scientists who are doing an experiment to create a window into parallel universes, but it turns out what they created was a door. There's a giant monster. It's written well enough, but because of some stories just work when they're published in five-page chapters and then collected. Others just don't. This suffers a little bit from a lot of the 2000 AD collections, where you're just getting into the story and then the final part is clearly, well, we've got to get this closed off in five pages. So I wasn't really satisfied with the ending. But Gabriel Hardman's art, I think he's done lots of stuff on... I'm assuming, I think he's a he. Gabriel is a man's name, isn't it?
Can be man's or woman's.
Either.
Well, they... I think they've done lots of Planet of the Apes books. I know I've of the Planet of the Apes comics. I've seen their work in online in lots of galleries and stuff like that. I love the art in this. It's really good. The monster stuff's good. The character stuff's good. It looks like very much its own thing, but there are lots of panels in this where it really reminds me of old school Gene Colan, who did Doctor Strange and Daredevil and Dracula way back when Gene Colan was working with heavy inks rather than now when he does stuff. I think he tends to do pencils and then colour over the top of them, which I don't think looks as good. It's a really nicely drawn book. It's well enough written, but I think it's kind of hampered by the format. It's a bit too big a story to be told in that way. And that's by no way a huge criticism, because some of my favourite books have ended up being a bit like that. There are loads of the Ian Edgington 2000 AD stories end up doing that, where they're fine, you're really enjoying the world that's being built, and then the last episode's like, wow, that was over a bit too quickly. So it's good stuff, I like it.
Cool, thanks. Cool. Nick,
was there any news this week? I didn't think, did anything exciting happen in comics?
Well, Affleck is Batman.
Was that this week?
That was last week.
Well, it was last Friday, so I think it was just after the pod.
Are we at the point now where we can say that even if it's a film based on superheroes, the films are so far distant and so huge a cultural thing on their own that really has nothing to do with Batman comics?
We don't know if he's going to be any good or not. Wait until the film comes out.
He's made a lot more good films than he's made bad films.
Yeah. People seem to forget that. And they also complained when Heath Ledger was the Joker, and look how that turned out.
With him dying.
Well, yeah, I wasn't referencing that part particularly. Oh, okay. More his staggering performance.
There's very few superhero or comic geeky conversations that go on in my office. Very, very few. But this did spark a conversation that a couple of people did get involved in. I kept quiet. They weren't being, you know, saying, oh, you shouldn't be or anything like that. They were just talking about it. And they were talking about it being a super... they're whinging about something. I can't remember what it was now. It wasn't... They were on the fence about Ben Affleck. And I said, no, the real question here, ladies, is where is Wonder Woman?
Mm-hmm.
And they all looked at me blankly. And I had a little sad smile on my face, and I carried on working while they had their conversation.
All right, bra burner. Why have you got to bring everybody down?
And I had to explain what the DC Trinity was to them, because they didn't get it either. And I was like, this is why I'm not involved in this conversation.
It is a little bit weird. But, I mean, it's like... Honestly, a director has more to do with how a film turns out than anything else. I happen to quite like everything. Snyder, but it's not like... But it's not like Ben Affleck really had anything to do with how Daredevil turned out.
No.
And I don't know, the director's cut of Daredevil isn't actually that bad a film.
You're not the first person. Chris from the other Murdoch papers said that actually the director's cut makes it a much better film than it is.
It's got much more about Matt Murdock in it, and so he gets his whole own storyline with Coolio.
The same as you feel about Prometheus, Nick, you know, what was left on the cutting room floor. So quite often there's an end product that actually is really good, and then it gets snipped up, and a lot of films have been a victim to that. So
I bought a double bill DVD because I'd heard that about the director's cut of Daredevil. I bought a double bill DVD of the director's cut of Daredevil and Elektra, I've never watched.
Elektra is awful.
Is it not good? But Jennifer Garner tries so hard.
Oh, she... And to be fair to her, she does quite well, but I'm not joking. Well, it's been a long time since I saw it, but it's really just a terrible, terrible movie. And the thing that kind of confuses me is I think that might be the first, like, major studio example of a female superhero movie.
Maybe. When was Catwoman? That was after, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't even count. Nobody that even as a remembers film. That. So it kind of depresses me slightly that's sort of the female superhero film, effectively, because it's a dreadful movie.
Very quickly, because I went to see Alpha Papa this week. It's all right. Can't imagine it making any new fans of Alan Partridge, because it is very specifically an Alan Partridge film, but I liked it a lot, and so did the people I watched it with. I think Jane and I talked about it last week, but I don't know if it made it onto what was left of the podcast. The one thing I realised when I was there, I had forgotten that there was a new Wolverine film out. I'd totally forgotten that was out. Have you heard? Because I think the early word of it was that it wasn't bad, but... it just seems to have disappeared.
One of my friends quite enjoyed it. Anna's cousins, who are 9 and 11 respectively.
9-11? Auspicious.
They're not actually 9-11. They didn't destroy the two towers, though. Okay. Given how much they run around and sort of go,
are they twins?
They probably could. No. Okay. That's why one's 9 and one's 11.
I'm getting very confused by the numbers.
Clearly. But no, they loved it, so. But then, obviously, they're a lot younger and their tastes are
terrorists.
Quite different. No.
Okay, so because I'd completely forgotten it was even out, so it was a bit weird, and I really kind of did want to watch that film, but now I don't know what to.
I think it's still in cinemas. It's just stuck on the sort of late showings.
Yeah. You'll see it, don't worry.
Eventually.
Yeah. Just one last thing on the Ben Affleck playing Batman. The 80,000 plus people that decided to petition to get him off the film should really go and find something worthwhile to petition against.
They do not understand how films work either.
They should look a little bit up and see what else is going on in the world. There are far more important things that they should be getting angry about.
Taylor Swift.
Well, I was going to say Miley Cyrus, but anyway.
Oh no, is it Miley Cyrus? I'm thinking of. They're all the same person.
I do genuinely find it a bit weird with everything that's going on in sort of Syria and whatever, or you know, all the different governments arguing. Somehow, the biggest villain in the world is the one that cast Ben Affleck as Batman.
And it wasn't, yeah.
Why?
I think it was Obama.
Obama cast Ben Affleck as
Batman? I think so. I don't think we should get into it, though. I think it's a
conspiracy.
Okay,
that is auspicious. Or suspicious.
You're right. Petitions, if nothing else, petitions don't really often make a difference. So it's kind of a bit, people are so impotent. Unfortunately, they're not impotent. They're all perfectly capable of breeding. I think that's part of the problem. And if I was in charge, they'd all be sterilised. No, I don't mean that at all.
Isn't that why we've got the Darwin Awards, though?
No, the Darwin Awards for people who knock themselves out. These people just continue to breathe.
They can have honorary mentions.
I probably wouldn't sterilise anyone if I was put in charge. That's my platform.
Okay.
I probably will not sterilise anyone. And I'm not a crook. Apart from milk.
Yeah, I don't know.
Greetings, my name's Peter Hemerson, and I'm here today to talk about comics. Not new comics, though. I want to talk about old comics. You see, I'm currently attempting to reread my entire collection in chronological order, going by the date the things were published in. And as I'm doing so, I'm finding that I'm coming across a lot of really excellent stories and books which, being decades old, don't really get much attention anymore. Well, I want to draw some attention to them. Today, I'm looking at Detective Comics issue 38, published by DC in April of 1940. The cover price at the time was 10 cents, but I bought my copy from Comixology for 99 cents. And to give you an idea of what a bargain that is, there was recently a copy on eBay for $17,500. Although there was free shipping, so there is that. Detective Comics 38 is significant for its lead strip, entitled Batman Introducing Robin the Boy Wonder. Yep, it's the first appearance of Dick Grayson and Robin. The writer for this is Bill Finger. Pencils were by Bob Kane, with inks by Bob Kane and Jerry Robinson. Dick Grayson's origin story has been told many times over the last 73 years, and while some of the details have changed, the main story remains remarkably similar to what we have here. While passing by Gotham City, Haley Circus runs afoul of gangster boss Zuko's protection racket. A refusal to pay leads to sabotage and the deaths of John and Mary Grayson, leaving their only son Dick an orphan. Interestingly, there's no suggestion that Bruce Wayne is attending the circus. Instead, Batman appears in time to prevent Dick, who overheard the gangsters threatening the circus owner, from going to the police. The suggestion here is that Zuko is so powerful that Dick wouldn't be safe if he came forward. After being moved deeply by the troubled face of the boy, Batman takes Dick in, and after swearing an undying oath, they begin training. The story then skips forward several months, as Dick goes undercover to locate Zuko's hideout. Meanwhile, Batman puts the squeeze on Zuko's operations, attacking his leg breakers and busting up a gambling house. Finally, Robin swings into action after Zuko and his goons are lured to a construction site. After Robin takes out most of the gang by himself, Batman intervenes and forces a confession from the unfortunate Blade. Enraged, Zuko knocks Blake from the girders to fall to his death. However, Robin is ready and photographs the act, sending Zuko to the electric chair for murder. With the death of his parents avenged, Bruce gives Dick the opportunity to return to the circus, but he declines, already looking forward to their next case as Batman and Robin. So in conclusion, why should you read Detective Comics 38? Well, it's a part of comics history, of course, with the first appearance of Robin. It's also cheap, available on Comixology for 99 cents, and unusually for Comixology, it also includes all of the backup strips that were in that issue as well, including Spy, Speed Saunders, Ace Investigator, Slam Bradley, and more. Also, one panel has Batman grinning broadly, and this doesn't happen nearly often enough in comics. So, Detective Comics 38, read it. Thank you. This is Peter Hammerson, signing off.
Should we do John's spotlight? Or do we let John do his spotlight? We won't do it.
I'm looking at the cover going, where's the title?
No,
it's a nice cover. Yeah, I did not realise that was the whole thing of the thing.
Well, it's the first 12 issues of the Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch run on The Authority.
How many issues did Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch do?
12.
So it's the only issues of The Authority that are worth bothering with?
Yes.
Am I spoiling your spotlight?
No. Okay. I wasn't even going to mention He Who Must Not Be Named.
I got a bit confused when I saw it. But anyway, yeah.
A little bit of background. The Authority are basically a superhero team that were created out of the ashes of Stormwatch, who were a previous superhero team that Ellis had been writing for Wildstorm.
They were awesome.
They were awesome, and basically one day Ellis found out that Stormwatch wasn't selling, and he said he felt quite guilty. And so, because the only reason they kept the book going was because the people who worked at Wildstorm loved reading it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's as good a reason as any. But anyway, carry on.
Ellis took a really interesting way out of this, and he basically killed Stormwatch using aliens.
I love that crossover.
The thing is, when I read that crossover years ago, I just read it. I accidentally skipped the page with the cover to the main issue on it, which had the aliens going around the outside of it. So I got to the middle of this book, and all of a sudden, I think one of the characters just gets taken out by a chest burster.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a proper sort of, oh shit, I can't believe that just happened. Oh. And then he proceeded to wipe the rest of them out. A few of them survive, and he basically has them all kind of come back in the first issue, and it's basically a Black Ops Stormwatch team that get brought in because a terrorist has attacked. I think, first of all, it's Moscow, then it's London, and he's basically doing a chair face Chippendale and trying to see if anyone gets that reference.
I don't. Carry on.
And he's
sounds like a Grant Morrison thing.
No.
Okay.
It's nothing to do with comics, really.
Okay.
But it's basically this terrorist is carving his symbol into the world. And basically, the Authority turn up. I love the way the first issue's done because it effectively is a lot of flashbacks and a lot of fill-in detail that basically end with the Authority just turning up in front of a bunch of superpowered clones and just basically saying, piss off.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the end of your first issue. And from that point on, they are pretty much just kicking the stink out of anyone. And the thing that makes the Authorities, a large part of it is the artwork. You've got Brian Hitch's artwork, which is really sort of big, widescreen, kind of just like he did on the Ultimates.
It's very clean as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think better. I actually think this is still the best of Brian Hitch's work that I've seen. And it gives like his ability to just draw these huge landscapes or huge sort of panoramic shots.
They're like widescreen panels.
Yeah,
that's
universes.
It's very cinematic. Yeah.
Yeah, it all looks very cinematic, and it's all really nicely detailed. It's very cleanly drawn, and it just looks like a Hollywood blockbuster. But Hollywood still can't do special effects to match up to this, and it really sort of gives it this huge feel that you realise has just been kind of sort of, you realise just how influential that art style has been in the years since this book came out. The other thing with it is Warren Ellis's writing. It's very much Warren Ellis. I think the book at times almost borders on satire in some strange ways, because it's
very cynical. It's very cynical.
It's very cynical. The Authority aren't a typical superhero team. They've just got this whole thing that they will get the job done no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And you've basically got Jenny Sparks, who is the spirit of the 20th century, who is this sort of very old English woman who has stopped aging around the age of 20. She's incredibly bitchy and very snarky to everyone. And you've also got Jack Hawksmoor, who is the god of cities, which is he basically can talk
I love that character
to
so
any
much.
City on earth. Mm-hmm. And basically when he is in that city, he can shift it and move it and use it, and he has superpowers when he's in the city. He's completely useless if he's in Dartmoor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really sort of interesting thing. You've got the Doctor, who is this shamanic being who's got the memory and abilities of all the Doctors before him. He's also an incredible drug bucket.
Mm.
And I'm still pretty convinced he is actually an analogue for Grant Morrison.
I think he's Warren Ellis poking a little bit of fun at Doctor Who, though, as well.
Yeah,
it's that. When you say he's got the memories and skills of all of the Doctors before him, you mean that his is a role that is taken on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And you also have the Engineer, who is someone that's had all their blood taken out and replaced with 9 pints of nanobots. And
this is back when nanobots are like in the 1980s. Yeah. This is what computers were like in the 1980s. It's shorthand for magic, basically. Techno magic.
Yeah, it's this kind of techno. She can shapeshift. She's like a T-1000, but better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've also got Swift, who is this incredibly snarky woman with wings who can fly incredibly fast. At one point, you actually see her fly through the middle of somebody and they explode. And then you've got the last two, who are probably the most famous and also the most interesting, is you've got Apollo, who is this analogue for Superman, who is basically the god of the sun. He is Superman. All his powers come from the sun, and he can fly, and he's super fast. He can shoot beams out of his eyes. And then you've got his boyfriend, Midnighter, who is basically Batman, but he happily kills people, and he also has this, it's kind of a superpower that's never really explained, where he just looks at somebody and says, the fight we're about to have, I've already had in my head. Everything you do, I know. And then just literally punches them, and they usually die.
When Warren Ellis writes him, when Warren Ellis invented him, he was basically Batman. Mm. And you weren't sure if he'd been augmented, if he'd actually been augmented, but he had what you think of as Batman's skill set, so heavily trained that you can't surprise him. He became a lot more than that in the hands of lesser writers, didn't he? But, like, we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, I think the thing that makes Apollo and the Midnighter so interesting is that he literally takes Batman and Superman and puts them into a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first sort of big sort of gay couple in comics. And to be fair, their relationship is a very low-level thing in the book. It is barely discussed until, I think, sort of about, like, somewhere near the end of the run. And the way that they behave is very subtly done, almost to the point that you don't realise. And there's no, like, Ellis doesn't feel the need to put in a big, oh my God, they're gay moment.
It's just a normal
character relationship, and it works really well. But anyway, sorry, I'm just following my notes here.
That's a lot of notes, John.
That's really, really, like, fine writing.
It is. Well, yeah, my writing is very small. Actually, what I do like is as I get further down the page, it just descends more and more into complete sort of scribble.
And it becomes someone else's handwriting.
Oh, yeah, that's Anna's handwriting. She was making notes for me while I was shaving my head.
Okay.
But, no, the thing I like about The Authority is that it's what I call a 21st century superhero book. The whole fact that everyone's, like, the powers are all modern archetypes. Sort of like no one gets bitten by a radioactive badger or something. Mm. it's all like the powers are basically not accidental, they're experimental, they're scientific. You've got Hawksmoor, who's this god of cities. He's like an industrial superhero. He's built out of the modern world, and it's that that gives him his power. You've got the Doctor, who experiments with drugs. You have characters with very fluid sexualities that can change. And it's a lot more sort of open, and the heroes reflect a truly modern world. And it also has lots of big science. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly big science ideas. I mean, we have an Earth is basically an alternate Earth that's made contact with aliens in the 15th century.
Like the Albion thing going on.
Centuries of crossbreeding create this civilization called Sliding Albion that basically invades Earth from, like, our Earth, or the Earth with the Authority, from an alternate dimension. And it's just a lot of the ideas. You've got, like, the Authority themselves basically fly around in a base that exists outside of time and space but can teleport anyone anywhere. And I think it's interesting that these sort of ideas are huge, but they never actually bog down the story.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think the story is probably one of the most basic and streamlined I think I've ever read. It's really sort of just kind of quick, fast-paced. It's like, right, we'll send people here, they'll do this, then they're going to go over here. And it's basically, I said, it's not so much about world-building for Ellis, it's more about world-destroying. There's pretty much every issue somewhere pretty famous gets the shit kicked out of it.
Yeah, it's proper action movie comics.
Yeah.
Which kind of, unfortunately, it's like other comics and action movies have taken the wrong things from it. They've taken the carnage and they've kind of missed out the simplicity, which I also think is a problem with Red, the movie, compared to Red, the comic. Those, the comic, Warren Ellis was writing comics that were really like old school Shane Black. Yeah. Wisecracking but fast action movies. And
say it's basically the thing that makes the Authority so good is that it is the blueprint for everything that's come since. I think you can pretty much say that if there wasn't the Authority, there wouldn't be an Avengers movie.
Some truth in that.
Or if there was, it would be a very different film.
There wouldn't have been an Ultimates without
There wouldn't have been an Avengers movie without the Ultimates.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's just basically, it is, the reason it works so well is because Ellis just takes the rule book, tears it up, and then reinvents it and just goes, right. But it's like you say, a lot of the things that people have taken from it, sort of like the big, sort of expansive panels and the action scenes and all of this, they've kind of taken all of, like, sort of physical bits, but they've left a lot of the stuff that actually really makes it work as a book behind, which is why it kind of, reading it, I was just like, oh, this is incredible. It was literally, I think it was, I just read it in three sittings of an arc every night. I'd just be like,
actually, that's, can you just, because I haven't read it in a little while, but one of the things I've always loved about it is the structure of it, that structurally it's perfect and it flows perfectly. So just remind me, there's the overarching story. Jenny Sparks, without going into detail, has a very distinct arc across those 12 issues that doesn't stop other people from doing stuff with her afterwards, but very much closes her off as a character that's Warren Ellis's character. And there are three arcs, and each one is a huge scale threat, but the threat escalates in each one. So is that right?
The threat in the first one is a domestic terrorist who is an old Stormwatch enemy that feels a lot like the Mandarin in terms of he's this terrorist that's just got superpowered clones and he's having them beat up cities.
It's a little bit racist. No, he isn't really, is he? No. He's not very Fu Manchu-y, really.
No, I mean, if anything, he reminds me more of the Mandarin in Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
The second arc is they're obviously fighting the invasion from Sliding Albion, which is the alternate Earth.
So another world.
Yep. And then the third arc, which is basically at the very close of the 20th century, there are sort of monoliths appearing in various bits of the Earth. It's having huge effects on the Earth. And it turns out that what's happened is basically the Earth and the solar system are the place where this being that created the rest of the universe, so effectively God, is born.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is God's gone off on a tour of the rest of the universe and has come back and has found out that in his absence there's been this kind of virus that's moved in and evolved, which is basically humanity.
Yeah.
And basically just decides, well, I'm going to have to get rid of them. And so God has to, or basically the authority, end up facing down this being that is effectively God. And at points it involves them travelling through his veins and capillaries and finding, like, there's entire civilizations in his bloodstream. And it's
wow.
this mm-hmm. huge sort of, like, massive biological threat. And it's sort of, like you say, it's very interesting because that is very much Jenny Sparks' arc.
Mm-hmm.
She has a very definite beginning, a middle and an end. And it all sort of goes through that. But you also see the other characters and the way that their sort of relationships change and adapt, and they've all, like, got previous histories that other people would go into later. But the thing that makes it so good is that it doesn't feel like you have to know these characters. It's everything you need is in that book. It's completely self-contained, and it works brilliantly. It's just like I say, having the four issue arcs, they're very sort of concise, very well defined, and it just works really well. It kind of makes you think, everyone's always about, oh, we've got to put as much into this universe as we can, and actually I think the reason the authority works is because it strips most of it out.
Quite straightforward.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you're being told a story about, you're being told about these characters. They just happen to be, they're just there and you're watching
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a classic, it's what sequels are supposed, each book is what sequels are supposed to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Not having to make story elements, not introducing a son that
yeah.
a character doesn't need, but just they're in a bigger situation.
Yeah.
It's also a classic story structure in that it's the power of threes. There are three threats. Each one is bigger than the last. One, they're
mm-hmm.
fighting a country. The next one, they're fighting a planet. The third one, they're effectively fighting a small universe or
yeah.
like God, basically. That's how it's supposed to feel, and that's why you don't really need much more after that book, I think
yeah.
it's fair to say. It's telling that without naming the writer who took over, it becomes a soap opera straight afterwards.
Mm.
And everything you've just said about Apollo and the Midnighter, the next writer's first arc is about them getting married, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just about them getting married, but that's like the thing. They're like strutting around telling, and which is fine if that's what you're in the market for, but those 12 issues aren't soap opera. They're like
yeah.
a story. They're like a proper meaty story
yeah.
that you can get into.
Oh.
And
yeah.
I think that's the thing. Apollo and the Midnighter are probably two of the manliest, sort of like hard as nails characters you can ever possibly imagine.
Did you find, I'm conscious not to go on about it too much, but Swift always seems like a really odd character in the middle of all that. She seems to be there because every super team has to have a flyer.
Yeah, Swift seems a bit sort of, she doesn't get to do as much as some of the others. I mean, like, they've all got their thing. The Doctor is scary.
Mm.
Midnight is just pretty sort of hard and quite brutal. Apollo's basically just a god. Jenny Sparks is immortal. You've got the engineer with the nanobots and Hawksmoor with his cities. Swift just kind of turns up and flies around.
Mm.
But she does have really cool moments in it. It's like I said, the point where she flies through somebody and they just explode is brilliant, because it's just kind of, you're there going, what does this character really do that's any good? Oh, that. And that's
yeah.
the thing, I like the fact that they pretty much sum things up in one panel. It's Ellis and Hitch really make it sort of work as just sort of, we don't need to have like 15 panels a page. It's just like three or four. It feels almost quite manga in some
ways.
It's
very punchy and very
yeah.
like, it's quite style over, it's almost style over content, but the content's there. It's just
yeah.
it just doesn't bang on about it. I think my favorite panel might be in the second book, where Hawksmoor and the Midnighter, I haven't read it in years, Hawksmoor and the Midnighter, they've been taking out spaceships efficiently, but they decide they're going to down a spaceship, and they one of them sort of has this big smile on his face and says, I'm going to try something different with this ship. I'm going to punch it to death or something like that. It's brilliant.
Right, here it says, the Midnighter, I have plans. Yes. We're going to beat it up.
Yeah, we're going to beat up the ship. Yeah, it's
and then I think they literally just... He literally just smashes a building into it.
I love Hawksmoor so much.
Anyway, that's it. That's
have you got anything else to say about that?
No.
That's good. That's
excellent.
Really good.
Thanks, John. That looks really good. I think I might have to buy that.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Ooh, present for my brother.
Oh, he'll like that. It's the perfect book for a literate 15-year-old. So that's good.
Please note, listener, that my brother isn't 15, and I'm not, you know, I'm not buying him games and books that aren't appropriate for his age.
But aren't age, yeah. Because GTA might be a bit bad.
That's a lot, probably not for 15-year-olds.
No, he said, shaking his head. But
then again, I remember when I bought GTA 4 and I was queuing up to buy it at midnight in Tesco's, and my friends and I were having a conversation with a woman behind us that was there with a sort of 15-year-old son. And to be fair, the kid was pretty mature. I think he sort of knew what GTA was about. And his mum clearly understood what GTA was about and was very aware of the content. But it was just really odd, sort of like, oh yeah, this game's an 18.
Yeah, it's not, yeah, that's weird.
It is strange. But at least they were all aware of what was going on. I'm glad they were mature. Did he look like he was shaving? Did he have a little moustache?
No.
Oh, shit, that's a shame. What are you guys doing this week? Anything interesting?
This week I'm going to be looking after guinea pigs.
Don't kill them.
I won't kill them.
No. But if you do kill them, just make sure you've got, like, take photos of them when you get there, because guinea pigs should be relatively easy to replace.
I could just get some guinea pigs.
Yeah.
No, I will try not to kill them. And I think I'm going out for a birthday celebration this weekend.
Whose birthday is it?
It is Eamon.
Oh, yes, he's a great artist. Artist of the comic The Gatekeeper. He's very good.
Name dropped there. Yes, we'll be going out for his birthday. And I think that's it. I don't think I'm doing anything else.
Okay, John, what are you doing?
Try
and do some lunch tomorrow. We'll try and do lunch tomorrow. Yeah.
And this weekend I'm going to see the Cornetto trilogy at the Harbour Lights.
Oh, okay. That's
so
cool.
That'll be
have you seen The World's End already yet?
No.
Oh.
I'm leaving it specifically for this.
Okay.
So I'm hoping it's good.
I've rekindled my interest in seeing that film because they were all on a Comedy Bang Bang, the Comedy Bang Bang podcast, and it was quite fun listening to them. So I'd quite like to watch it now.
Yeah.
But I might, you know, every time I think about watching Hot Fuzz again, I just think, or I could just watch Shaun of the Dead again. And then I just end up watching Shaun of the Dead again.
I think Hot Fuzz gets better with repeat
viewings.
Did
you say Hot Fuzz or Cock Fuzz?
No, Hot Fuzz.
Okay, good. My hearing's really going, I think. I'm just hearing what I want to hear now.
Wow.
Is that going to be your excuse to Amy when the baby starts crying?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What's that?
Yeah, I don't know. Go on.
I think Hot Fuzz gets better with repeat viewings.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know, but then again, Shaun of the Dead is an instant classic that still gets better with repeated viewings.
It's so tight, that film is so tight, I love it.
So, I don't know.
But you're going to watch that, okay?
Yeah, but I did see a really nice picture of someone did that was a Hot Fuzz as a 90s video game from Capcom, and it's basically the end gunfight from Hot Fuzz reimagined as Final Fight.
Oh, that's quite cool. I saw there's a YouTube channel, actually. I meant to talk about it a couple of weeks ago, that does like 8-bit versions of films, and the one I saw was Blade Runner, which was quite good. Blade Runner kind of reimagined as a 1980s, early 90s sort of video game, Nintendo
stuff.
This
with the sort of weird Nintendo cutscenes with the picture and
a
bit of dialogue.
It's pretty good. It was really well done. But and they've got a whole bunch of them there, but I didn't watch any of the others. I think we talked about it last week, but I don't know if it made it into the show again. But the I liked Scott Pilgrim so much that I kind of just want to see Edgar Wright doing his own thing a little bit now. I don't know, anyway. But you're going to enjoy that. So what else are you up to?
I don't know, probably because I don't know if you've seen Pitch Perfect, the movie with Anna Kendrick in Edgar Wright's other half, in a sort of slightly related but not note.
Is she his other half?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know
but
that.
But there's, oh, well, she was the last time I checked. She might not be.
It's
now,
Hollywood. She could not be.
But
Strictly speaking, Edgar Wright is probably her other half.
True.
It's all, you know, they're just each other's halves. Anyway, carry on.
But she did.
It's always a minefield when John's on the show.
She did a song called Cups, which is basically just got this really catchy little sort of beat in it. And Anna's, my Anna, has been learning to do that. And it's quite funny because all
do
I
it
can
on
hear.
What?
It's basically all you need is one cup. And you just sit there and you sort of do this beat, and the whole song goes along to it. And I've just had the beat stuck in my head continually because all I've got is Anna just going and sort of playing out this beat, which I would do now, but I can't actually do it because I don't have a cup and I don't know half of it.
I'm writing Anna Kendrick Cups.
It's also called When I'm Gone.
Also,
he's not really writing. He's just turning away, talking to make you think he's
muttering
writing.
To
I don't
himself,
think he can actually write.
Go on, I'm just going to show it to the webcam. There's no webcam. I can write, I just can't write very well.
Anyway, that's my weekend.
That's good. So, Cornetto Trilogy and not being able to get that song out of your head.
Yep.
Okay, that's cool. I have no idea what I'm going to be doing. Oh, yes, I'm going to an engagement, a big engagement party tomorrow. And I haven't really thought beyond that because that involves travelling and I always get confused. So I've given over my weekends to, I'm letting Amy plan that out because she's good at that stuff. And then next week I'll be back to work. I was off work for like 5 weeks. I'm really having trouble being back at work.
Yeah, it is.
It's a tough call. Anyway, okay, so that was fun. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, listener. You're awesome. Thank you, contributors. You're awesome. I'm streamlining that a little bit. Did you notice? I guess that's us. We out?
Yeah.
Yep.
We outie, folks. Bye-bye.